Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Commercial Insurance. Business owners, meet Progressive Insurance. They make it easy to get discounts on commercial auto insurance and find coverages to grow with your business. Quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers. Discounts and coverage selections not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to episode 20 of the On Deck Red Sox podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network. I'm your host, Bob Osgood, and I am joined, as always this week, by Shelley Verstraete. Shelley, we had an entire agenda ready to go, and just out of nowhere, we have a new first topic to lead the show today.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, we had a full agenda. I mean, we're going to talk about draft stuff and just pull all draft stuff into this
action
episode.
Packed,
and then some other big news happens, so you gotta love it.
Yeah, you want to tell us what that is?
Hand
it over to you.
Yeah, I don't know if you know the listeners have heard of this guy, but some guy named Jaren Duran was called up to the majors.
Nice.
Yeah, it was huge news. I mean, I've been kind of expecting it for a while, but it just honestly, it came out of the blue. So Bob, I mean, did it come out the blue for you as well?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Commercial Insurance. Business owners, meet Progressive Insurance. They make it easy to get discounts on commercial auto insurance and find coverages to grow with your business. Quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers. Discounts and coverage selections not available in all states or situations.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for it. In fact, it was funny. I was on with Keaton a couple days ago, and I said, you know, well, now I don't even know if he's going to be up in July because the outfield has been looking so good, and they're just all on point defensively, and I don't know if they're going to disrupt that. And the first time that I had any doubt creep in, they call him up the first day out of the break in Yankee Stadium, what was expected to be the first game for any team out of the break before we get some more updated news tonight. They were going to throw him right to the fire. He was going to be hitting seventh and playing center field and, you know, in the big stadium.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
what more can you ask for than that? So we were super excited over here, and then got news that there's some COVID outbreak protocols, all of that going on again. So won't get into that too much, but we'll talk about Duran. Shelley, kind of what are your expectations, and you know, where do you think he fits in, and who might lose playing time as a result of Jaren Duran getting called up?
I'm really excited. I was in when he was being called up, like he was going to be making his debut in Yankee Stadium, so you know he's going to be a lefty. I was just expecting like some type of like home run stuff, like he was going to hit like a home run off the short porch. Like I was just all bought in.
Yeah.
But I guess if I have to think about it, who might be losing playing time? I guess it kind of depends on whoever is playing center field or second base. You know, do we got Kike Hernandez or either? I think that he would be, you know, moving over towards second base.
Yeah. So, which is interesting because he had been playing such a great center field for weeks now. And with his glove and his arm, he made two spectacular catches last week and had been throwing multiple players out at the bases and close on other throws that he made from pretty deep. So it was interesting just to see that this was the timing that he was moved. And I just think he's going to bounce around. I think they have so much versatility and that works to their advantage here. You know, I think Arroyo probably will lose a start or two each week. I don't know that Arroyo was, as much as I love the guy, was necessarily a full-time bat over there. And there's also news that he might work over to first base a little bit with, you know, Dahlbeck maybe not being a full-time bat either. So if you work all of these guys in 4 or 5 days a week, maybe he takes a spot for Renfro every now and then on the corner. I think that they're just going to move people around, and Kike will probably play more second base, maybe half the time that he's at second base. But you know, this is where the versatility that they have, and Marwin Gonzalez heading to the DL with one of the moves that they'll need to make along with another call up that we'll talk about in a minute. So I think it'll just be a little bit of everything, but I would say the move from center to second for Kike would probably have a bit of a trickle down effect, but we'll have to see. And, you know, we were already going to talk about an Athletic article noting his improved, Duran's improved defense and swing and miss in the last month or so. The hitting coach, AAA Rich Gedman, old catcher for the Red Sox, old friend, said, I keep waiting for him to get tired. He's been doing this thing for over a year now, from the alternate site last year to playing winter ball, to spring training, to halfway through a season here. When is he going to get tired? He's got a motor. He brings intensity every single day. And there was other notes in the article, too, that talked about just how he's kind of in his head creating doubters almost that just to kind of fuel him. And he just seems to have that killer mentality, you know, that, you know, me against the world type of player, that the more that you read and just everybody around him, you can tell that he's a, not just a unique talent, but seems to have that mental edge that you really need to be a star player.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I just love hearing that, like, he is just so devoted. Like, I'm going to get better. I'm going to be the best, quote unquote. And you know, taking that into what he did in 2020, just that total swing change, he absolutely transformed himself from basically just like a slappy hitter to a guy who has a good hit tool plus power. Like, he totally transformed himself. So yeah, I totally am buying into just the baseball player that Duran is.
Yeah, and we talked about it a while back, but it's worth bringing up again the batted ball metrics that have changed as a result of that swing change. And you look at it on his, look at his Fangraphs page and look at the batted ball data. And last year, he, or from 2019, I should say, you know, at the high level, 11% of his, it was 11% home run to fly ball rate, and then at Double A, it was a 2% home run to fly ball rate. at AAA, it's been 29% of the balls that he hits in the air are home runs. His infield fly ball percentage, you know, pop-ups have gone down from 19% to 9%. He's hitting the ball in the air, but it hasn't affected his walk rates. His walk rates have stayed steady pretty much throughout. He's all the way up at 11% for a walk rate. So he's had a great eye, and his strikeout rate is at 23.7% after it was 23.9% at AA. So that has not, the walk to K ratio hasn't been affected negatively. In fact, it's been a slight positive despite the swing change. So it's just so rare to see something. You see, you know, players sell out for power and it affects their average or their on base percentage or how often they strike out. None of those things have happened. He's increased his pull percentage and across the board. So it's just everything that you want to see. And I don't know, you probably can tell that I'm excited about this. So
we're both very excited about this.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been talking about it all year, and that goes ahead of the draft review, which is was another exciting thing that was from Sunday to Tuesday and started in round one with a shocker right out of the gate. We talked about Henry Davis and Jack Leiter so much on the preview episode as the two players that we wanted to preview that we thought were in that number four. We think they'll get one of these two guys, but who really knows? We didn't know what was going to happen. And those players went one and two, which at first was just like, wow, you know, those were the players that we talked about and who we were interested in. And then you started to think, okay, well, who's going to fall as a result of that? And then the curveball came with the Detroit Tigers taking Jackson Jobe at the third pick. It sounds like they had some sort of, you know, whether it was a promise to take him or some sort of agreement. And all of a sudden, Marcelo Mayer is there with the fourth pick out of Eastlake High School in Chula Vista, California. What did you think? We didn't say more than two words about other than his name last week. So what were your thoughts when you saw that Mayer fell to four?
Oh, my gosh, Bob. Sunday was very interesting for me because, I mean, I turn on, you know, the MLB draft. I'm getting it all excited because I honestly thought that we were going to get Henry Davis. Like, I was totally just bought into that. And then when he went 1-1, I'm like, okay. And then when Jack Leiter went 1-2, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen. I honestly thought that, you know, Detroit was going to take Bayer. But as soon as it came in, like, I jumped up and I was like, oh my gosh, we got, I still can't believe it. Like, I'm still pinching myself. Like, this is like, honestly, this was like my number one guy in the draft. And I never thought that we would have a chance at him. And I'm just like, I'm so excited about this guy. Like, I just keep reading, you know, different articles and different things about him. I think that he has just pretty much everything. Like, he has just, I mean, maybe outside of maybe a speed kind of tool set, like, he has above average tool sets outside of speed. So I still can't believe it that we landed him at four.
Yeah, and to just throw some grades on that from Baseball America, from, you know, the 20 to 80 scale, they throw a 65 hit tool on Mayer, which is outstanding. 55 power, 60 in the field, 60 arm, and as you mentioned, a 40 run. Has just a contact skills and defense floor that it's you don't see the risk of him not making it to the league, right? He's going to be a major league player. It's just a question of what his upside is. And he has just this simple, short stride, controlled swing that when you watch it, you just think it's from the left side, is put together in a lab. You know, it's just so smooth and it's so simple and has just a natural look. And he has the same natural look when you watch his footwork and his arm in the field. You know, has good range, good footwork, throws well, doesn't have much of a risk of moving off of the shortstop position. So there's just a lot of safety with the pick, but at the same time, it's not, I'm trying to think, you know, of a player, you know, Dansby Swanson, maybe like floor kind of thing, right? Where he could be a pretty good player, but has so much more ceiling than that. You hear the Corey Seager comps as a left-handed hitter where his power could emerge, and he did have that power in high school, hitting 410 with 13 homers in the high school season, which was against that San Diego County, Southern California, which was really tough competition that he faced. So in terms of, you know, throwing the money at Mayer, you know, we have that the Red Sox have 11.6 or 11.4 something, 11.4 that they can throw across the 20 picks. And you may not sign all 20 picks, and we'll talk about the other players in a little bit. But the slot for where the Red Sox pick was about $6.7 million. What are you hearing in terms of, do you think that they might have to go a little bit beyond that because of the player and where he was expected to go? Or do you kind of have any thoughts on how that might trickle down to the rest of the draft?
I do think that it might be like a little bit overslot. You know, he's currently projected like 6'7". So I'm thinking maybe like 6'8", 6'9", maybe 7. But I don't really think anything higher than that. But honestly, in my opinion, just give him all the money. I'm so excited about him.
Yeah, there's references in the past to teams that just went nuts in the first three rounds and then punted the rest of the draft or something along those lines. And while I don't think it'll be that drastic with Mayer and the second round pick, Judd Fabian out of Florida, they're both players that kind of fell in their laps, which is a great thing from a talent perspective. And walking away from the draft, if you said Mayer at 4 and Judd Fabian at 40, you would take that any day of the week. But as a result, they might need to pay a little bit more than the slot, and it might have affected how they drafted after that or whether they will be able to sign more than 14, 15 of their 20 picks, depending on some of the high school players that probably won't sign and might end up going to college because they don't, you can't really go beyond that 11.4. I think you can go 5% beyond that amount that you have for the draft, and then there are significant fines and losing of your first round pick if you go much beyond that. So I'm sure they'll sign both of the players at the start, but it will be interesting to see how that trickles down and perhaps whether they would have taken different players in rounds, you know, 3 through 10 than they did. So looking at the second round pick, as I mentioned, from Florida, Judd Fabian, he's an outfielder, and tale of two seasons with him. If you even, those early mocks that are probably coming out now, the ones from a year ago, sometimes you saw the Red Sox linked to Fabian with the fourth pick as early as last, you know, offseason. He ends up falling to 40 because he had early season struggles with swing and miss. He was striking out, I believe, more than 30% of the time for the first third to half of the season, and then had a great improvement later in the season, was the player that he was expected to be. You know, what have you seen from Fabian? What have you read about him, and what are your expectations in terms of, you know, ceiling, floor, with the outfielder from Florida?
You know, as you said, like prior to, you know, this NCAA season, you know, college season, he was really high up in the draft, but he really struggled. Basically, he is a big-time power guy, big-time strikeout guy. And the strikeouts at the beginning of the season was really, really bad. So he started falling down in, you know, the draft ranks and stuff like that. But he started to kind of sort of put it together towards, you know, the later part of, you know, his junior year at Florida. And that gives me a little bit of hope. I do think that he will always struggle with the swing and miss, but that power is legit. So I am totally fine with taking a gamble here.
Taking the gamble in the second round is a lot different than that being your first round player. If that was their first pick, if they had a great record last year and they were picking it 25 to 30 range, you might not make that pick. But in the second round, especially with what you had got in the first, it makes all sense in the world. There was the clip making the rounds this week of him hitting two home runs off of Jack Leiter in the same game, and that was, it seemed to be when he started to break out the second half of the season. Other note on him is his defensive potential, and just to, you know, we won't give the grades on everybody, but he's a 45 hit and a 60 power, so as mentioned, great power, 55 run and 70 field. Center fielder, and in the Baseball America write-up, they described him as a standout defensive center fielder for Florida since the day that he stepped on campus. So it's really interesting, you know, as a, you know, big power hitter, but also standout defensive center fielder with a 70 grade field. Really interesting. So it's all going to be about whether he can get rid of that swing and miss that's in his game, because as a college junior, he could be a quick mover, provided that he can get rid of that swing and miss. So if the power's there, they're not going to have to hide him on the field. He's not a DH type. He's a great center fielder as well.
Yep.
All right. So those were the two picks that were, you know, really exciting on the Sunday night and the start of the draft on Monday, which was rounds 2 through 10. And Fabian's slot is about $1.9 million. Again, they might need to go a little bit above that to ensure that he'll sign. Once you get past the second round, the slots go down to $830,000 for the third round, $500,000 and change for the fourth round, and then you're getting closer to $400,000, $300,000, $200,000 from the fifth round and beyond. So we won't go through all of those, but it's just interesting to know kind of what the expectations are. 6.7 for the first pick and 1.9 for the second pick. And, you know, it could be 5% or so above that. Fabian was the 27th ranked player on Baseball America's list and 23rd on MLB's list. Mayer was 1 for MLB and 2 behind Jordan Lawler for the second pick. I did, you know, I mentioned it, but if you want to, was there another name? We didn't talk about non-Red Sox in the first round, but I had it on the list here too. Was there any name that stuck out as a pick that you really liked outside of the Red Sox in the first round? Maybe a player that dropped a little bit, or someone that you were excited about that we talked about last week?
I really don't think so.
All right. I thought Khalil Watson falling all the way to 16. Yeah. With Miami. Yeah, that was interesting. And I knew you liked McGreevy, right? He went 18 to St. Louis, and that was they felt the same way that you did. You had him as kind of a late first round possibility, and he jumped up. And I mentioned Watson, but I thought Watson could potentially go fifth or sixth or something up there, and he dropped two picks apart from McGreevy. And then the other name that we mentioned last week, Gavin Williams, who was a potential second round target, although we didn't think it was too likely that he would fall. He went 23rd to Cleveland, which I love that kind of matchup with the Cleveland development of pitching with Gavin Williams from East Carolina. I thought that was a perfect match there. So kind of going beyond the second round, Tyler McDonough was the third round pick from NC State, and that was a name that you wanted to talk about a little bit, their third round pick, their second baseman.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be a really interesting guy. This might be a little bit of like cost savings, especially with Mayer and Fabian. Like they're probably both go over slot just because of their pedigree, talent, whatever. So McDonough is just kind of like a really interesting like third round pick. Maybe can take a little bit of cost savings. his slot is about, you know, $830,000, you know, so it might be a little bit, you know, less than that. But McDonough is about, he's kind of like on the smaller side. Like he's like 5'10", 180. But he's hit extremely well, you know, the entire time that he has been at NC State. He showed a little bit more over-the-fence power this year. He had a career-high 15 bombs. And scouts have really been impressed with his all-fields approach, with his power. Like, he has all-fields approach with his power, which is pretty cool. And his exit velos have been, pretty good for someone at his size. So, yeah, I really like the guy. I don't know what we have here, but it really sounds like a good baseball guy, and I'm really happy.
Right. You see the words, you know, gamer and 50s across the board and versatile. So, yeah, he was not a top 100 prospect on really any of the lists, and you're right. It could be someone that, conversely, they needed to save a little bit of money, you know, but still probably a signable player, but drafted a little bit ahead of where he was expected to go. Similar to Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who was their fourth-round pick, right-handed pitcher, Puerto Rico. He was going to be an Oregon commit, but, you know, drafted in the fourth round, might be enticed to take a contract. High school arm, 6'4", 160 pounds, throws 94 miles an hour. What did you have on Rodriguez, Elmer Rodriguez Cruz?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, like, he was, like, one of, like, the youngest players in the draft. He is still currently 17 years old. You know, he's pitching. You know, he lives in Puerto Rico. Like, he's committed to Oregon. So, this might be a little bit of a gamble here by the Red Sox. Maybe we can kind of entice him to come on. He's a projectable southpaw. He has a good fastball. He's still kind of working on his secondaries and stuff. But basically what I think of him is like just like a ball of clay. Like if we can, you know, entice him to come in, he could be like really interesting. But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't sign him.
Yeah, that would be certainly a long-term play compared to any of their other picks in the first three rounds. So the fifth round pick, Nathan Hickey, was a catcher from Florida. So they went back to the well with Florida there, University of Florida. And Hickey was the best hitter on a Florida team that was very good this year. He had a 317 average with a 435 OBP. And the report on him is a good hit tool contact guy, but also has plus raw power. They could potentially tap into a little bit there. The walks and strikeouts was the interesting part with Nathan Hickey. He had 42 walks and 20 strikeouts this season. So obviously good eye at the plate, good hit tool. I think defensively lags a little bit, but who knows? It could be one of those players. As the more and more that I hear that the robot umps could be coming in a few years, he's a 40 field. If he did stick a catcher, maybe that would be something that benefits him because he's got a 60 grade power. Struggled. The report, kind of his negatives are that he struggled up in the zone. So that's something to watch. But in the fifth round, seemed like a pretty good pick there that has some potential. Another college hitter, which they did, you know, for the first, you know, five out of six picks were hitters, while certain teams were taking pitchers and some teams were taking all pitchers. So they kind of zagged a little bit with the more pitching heavy draft than normal. So looking at rounds 6 through 10, you know, Shelly, I'll throw these names out there and you can let me know if there's any of these five that interest you. Daniel McIlvenny from Buena Vista, California, was their sixth round pick. High schooler. Seventh round pick, Wyatt Olds, a right-hander from Oklahoma. Eighth round, Hunter Dobbins, right-handed pitcher from Texas Tech. Ninth round, third baseman, Tyler Miller from Auburn. And in the 10th round, Matt Letwicky, a right-handed pitcher from Indiana. So four out of five in rounds 6 through 10. And after that, even more kind of college bats and arms that they went with. Any names that stick out in rounds 6 through 10 that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, Hunter Dobbins is kind of interesting. You know, he was at TCU, and he's currently recovering from TJ, so maybe it's kind of like a, you know, we can kind of sign him, and then he can, like, just kind of develop after.
He was throwing in the high 90s before he had surgery, so that seemed like kind of a, you know, roll the dice kind of pick in the eighth round there.
Yeah. So I mean, I really like that. And I don't know, I guess maybe kind of sort of from like a personal standpoint. My husband is a cousin of Daniel McKevy. So that Yeah, that kind of came out of that was a very surprising kind of development.
The newfound cousin.
Yes, and I'm just like, oh, okay. So that's kind of a guy that I'm just going to keep an eye out on, just because of family things. So yeah,
that's great insight. I love it. I'm not related to any of these players that I know of, but Tyler Miller in the ninth round, the third baseman from Auburn, he had really good numbers in the SEC, which made him interesting, and definitely had him kind of higher up on some draft boards. But kind of reading the reports on him, seems as if most of his power was from the pull side, and he had really low walk numbers, 6.5%. One of the lowest in the SEC, but you know, still good to see that he had 16 home runs in 51 games in the SEC. I mean, there's no denying that it's worth taking a shot in the ninth round, and hopefully they can, you know, work on that hit tool to get a better eye at the plate. But has some versatility, has played all over in the infield and the outfield there as well. Looking at rounds 11 through 15. Have a feeling I know who you're going to bring up here, but in the 11th round, Nico Cavadas, first baseman from Notre Dame. 12th round, Christopher Troy, right-handed pitcher from UC Santa Barbara. 13th round, Zach Erhard, shortstop from Wharton, Florida High School. Jacob Webb, right-handed pitcher from Miami of Ohio in the 14th, and then in the 15th, Peyton Green, high school shortstop from Green Hope, North Carolina, who is committed to NC State. So, who'd you like from this group, Shelley?
The guy that I really liked is Nico Cavadas. As I was just kind of like just seeing like he was drafted, I'm like, how on earth did this guy last to the 11th round? I don't know. Other than he's just a behemoth at first base, and that just really doesn't project well. Like, you really have to hit if you're a first base prospect. But I'm really, really intrigued. Like, he's a power bat for the left-hand side. He hit 21 home runs for Notre Dame in their 41 games, which is just great. Scouts have said that he can really hit the fastball, but he struggles with breaking and off-speed stuff, which will probably, you know, I hope that he can kind of develop. Maybe be able to hit some type of like breaking and off speed stuff. But just looking at the stat line and just everything, getting, you know, Nico in the 11th round, I love it. Like, I absolutely love that signing.
Yeah, you feel like there's a bit of a stigma, like almost that's overcorrected with the power hitting, limited defense, first baseman. I'm trying to figure out why he was available in the 11th round with a 65 power tool.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I can't figure it out, but I love that we picked him up in the 11th round. Like, I was I've been reading a couple reports. You got Baseball America, you got MLB Pipeline, you got Fangraphs, and I'm just like, why was he here? But I'm glad he was here, and I'm glad he's with our team.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I mean, he's got to hit, and he's got to hit a ton at every level because he's got limited defense, more of a 30 grade defense. But designated hitters exist, and it's probably going to be a position on all 30 teams starting next year. So I don't know. I mean, I was shocked that the player was there. So I was going to mention Peyton Green. He was a shortstop in the 15th round. He's one of the ones that would be most unlikely to sign. It sounds like a lot of teams had Green even as high as the top 50 on their boards, but probably got some, you know, word that he would only sign possibly if he was picked in one of the top rounds. And then by the time that it got to past round five, it was probably at a slot amount that he would find it more, you know, lucrative in the long term to go to college. But, you know, he was around top 100 in the Baseball America rankings with a 45 hit and a 50 power and a 55 run and a really good defensive player and someone that they think would stick at shortstop. So, again, 15th rounder, probably not someone that will take the $125,000 that goes with that spot, but we'll see if strange things happen. And then, just to round off the draft, round 16 through 20, same thing. The slot's $125,000 approximately per pick. BJ Vela, second baseman from Reed Lee Junior College in California. Luis Guerrero, right-handed pitcher from Chipola Junior College in Florida. Philip Sykes, outfielder from TCU in the 18th. 19th round, Tyler Uberstein, right-handed pitcher from Northwestern. And then Josh Hood is a shortstop in the 20th round. Anything to add at the bottom of this draft in the last five picks, Shelley?
Not really. There were a couple of seniors, senior signs who could be kind of like easy signs. But yeah, not really.
Yeah, Sykes from TCU was another center fielder. Seems like a run profile, line drive profile. He did hit .329 at TCU in a good conference and was on base 43% of the time. You know, potential bench outfielder type. Josh Hood was their last pick. It's interesting because no one's really seen him since 2019. He's had 2 years off because of the obvious 2020, and then in 2021, Penn in the Ivy League canceled their season entirely, and he is now transferring to NC State, and it's essentially going to be 3 years in between. But was, you know, had some good reports on him what will be 3 years before that, so it's possible that he does sign, and it doesn't seem like it's as unlikely as Peyton Green, but also interesting, but both of them are transferring to NC State. All right, what did I miss? Did we cover everything?
Probably yeah. Not. Yeah, I mean, it was a great, like, 3 days of just stuff, and I'm still pinching myself that we got Mayer at 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I'll be honest, I don't love the All-Star break draft, but, you know, it is something. There's something going on. But just Sunday and Monday, there was just, usually those are a couple days to just take a break from a every day for 200 days plus season that we have in the baseball year, and it ended up being more chaotic than anything. So,
yep, 100%.
All right, moving on. There is plenty of news to talk about in the minor leagues. So another call-up on Thursday. We mentioned Jaron Duran earlier. I don't think it officially happened. I don't think either of the moves officially happened because the game got called in the early afternoon. But Tanner Houck going to be called up as well, presumably Friday or whenever they have their first game coming out of the break. And in his 5 rehab starts, gave up 9 runs in 18 innings, walked 7, struck out 22 down at Worcester. And a reminder that he's had 5 MLB starts and 1 brief relief outing where he's struck out 33 and 27 innings with a 1.98 ERA. And Cora was quoted in the pregame as saying that they were going to use him out of the bullpen early in the Yankee series and then have him start on Wednesday and then do the same thing, use him out of the bullpen, and then maybe the week after give him another start. So it seems like they want him, one, to be versatile, but also to protect his arm, because I don't think he went more than 4 innings in the minors. So it's just kind of that in between to see whether they're going to need him, and then also just playing this many days in a row. The way I look at that is give some arms a break in the long term in the rotation too. I don't know what you read from that comment.
Yeah, kind of like what I kind of like. Kind of read from it. It's like they're kind of going like 5.5 man instead of like 6 man. So it's like maybe are they using Houck as like the bulk bullpen guy, you know, at the start, and then maybe easing him in and maybe taking one of a underperforming starter out. So I get it, but it's interesting. I really want to see how like this first kind of 1-2 rotation turns kind of goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way of putting it. 5.5 man staff right now. And it also depends what happens in those 18 days. Do they increase a lead in the AL East? I mean, the division is going to be so important. But, you know, will they have more opportunities to give their rotation a break? Or are they going to need to have everybody throwing 170 to 190 innings to get that division, because no one, you know, that one game wild card is just a whole different animal, even though it's been around for a few years now.
Yeah.
Chris Sale had his first rehab start. Up-and-coming prospect Chris Sale at the Florida Complex League. He threw three innings today, on Thursday, I should say, four hits, no runs, no walks, five strikeouts, 39 pitches. So very efficient. I was reading Ian Kundle a little bit, talking about it was all weak contact, and he had notes that he was throwing 94, but then Cora this evening said that he was clocked at 97, which is a huge difference. And if Sale's throwing 97 already, then that's going to make things pretty interesting. His next rehab start is set for Tuesday in Portland. So between that and then the slightly, you know, there was another rehab start, right, Connor Seabull, but maybe a side note compared to Chris Sale. He was down in the Florida Coast Complex League as well on Monday, and oddly enough was against Chris Archer, who was also rehabbing with the Rays. Seabull threw 2 2/3 innings, two runs, and seven strikeouts. So, you know, anything to add? Just good to see injured pitchers moving in the right direction, Shelley.
Yeah, honestly, it's great to see both. That Sale start, I really like it. You know, Ian said that, you know, it's mostly, you know, Ian Kundle of, you know, the great SoxProspects.com website. You know, he said it was like mostly weak contact, one double. That makes sense. If he's getting weak contact and he's getting like, you know, just a BABIP luck with that one double, it's totally fine. Like, he didn't give up any walks. I loved it. And then just seeing Seabold just get back on the mound, because it's been kind of radio silence ever since, yeah, we're going to shut him down for some type of injury. So just seeing him getting back on the mound, he performed like pretty well. Ks in 2 2/3 innings. It's really great.
You saw more of the Futures game than I did. Brian Bayo and Jeter Downs, what did you see from the two of them this past weekend?
Well, I saw a lot more of Jeter Downs than I did of Brian Bayo. Like, I'm going to get on my soapbox here.
Let's hear it.
With the MLB, like, the broadcast, when Brian Bayo was on the mounds, they were interviewing, I can't remember who they were interviewing, but they were interviewing a player who had just done something in the, you know, half inning prior, and they were just focused on that interview, and I didn't really see anything of Brian Bayo. Like, I saw more of Bayo on Twitter than I did on the broadcast, so shame on them. I'm very upset.
That's not great.
Yes, it's not great, because that's
especially like family members getting to see him throw on national television for, you know, the only time really of the whole season.
Exactly. It was just, yeah, not good. But I think that he did okay. Like, he really was facing like a good, a lot of good prospects in that lineup, and he was okay. But again, like, he had just made his like debut in Double A, so I'm totally fine with Bayo not looking like lights out. And Jeter Downs, I mean, he looked pretty good. He got a double, two RBI double off Ethan Small, which is pretty good. It was okay. I was just upset about the Bayo thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great that he was in the game. I don't think, and we talked about Bayo plenty, but we didn't see that coming, that he was going to be in the Futures game as early as this year. So it's just awesome that he got that opportunity, albeit, you know, just getting 2/3 of an inning. But the Downs double was a rocket to left field, you know, that got to the left field wall in about a half a second off of Small. So he struck out in his other at bat, but good to see both of them there. Didn't get to catch as much of that game as I would have liked to. Moving along, just a few other notes. We did want to mention Tristan Casas, who is starting to come alive a little bit. We haven't talked about him as much, which we probably should have, but he did not hit a home run after returning from the Olympic qualifiers from June 8th through July 11th. That was 26 games without a home run. Hit .226 in that span. So he homered on Tuesday night as well as Wednesday night, up to 5 and 6. be good to see him start to get going a little bit, although it seems like the plate discipline was still solid despite that slump that he was in. And then promotions, a couple of promotions. Jose Adames up to Worcester. Alex Scherf was promoted to Portland AA. And then from Salem to Greenville, Jax Groshans, Brandon Walter, and Cody Scroggins. And then I also wanted to list Chi Young Liu, who was briefly, I think, one start at the Florida Complex. They brought him up to Salem. He's had two outings. He was great in his first outing, five shutout, and then got hit around a little bit, giving up five earned in his second outing. So any of those that you're excited about, Shelley, or notable in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, Jax Groshans, I have been a fan of, especially this year. He's performed really well. Our catching depth is not that great outside of Connor Wong. So if we can really get Jax Groshans as some type of maybe like a backup type of catcher, it's really great. And to see him get a promotion, I just absolutely love it.
Yep, I think that is probably the most notable one. I did want to mention Jose Adames, who I don't think we've talked about before. He's 28 years old, and he got promoted to Worcester, but throws 100, and in 19 outings, 19 and a third innings down at Portland, he had 10 saves. He was their closer there, 2.33 ERA. 8 walks, only 11 hits in those 19 innings, so giving up less than a base runner per inning, and he struck out 27. And since he's gotten to Worcester, he's had thrown 3 innings, 2 hits, no runs, got a win. So that is certainly a late bloomer that kind of seemed like a depth reliever, but threw 100. And hey, if you throw 100 and you can find even a reasonable second pitch, you know, 28 years old from the Dominican Republic, just a name to keep an eye on that, you know, if he continues to throw well at Worcester, it could be a name that we see with all of the pitching injuries that we've seen this year. He could get a chance at some point. Maybe it was like a September call-up or something.
Yep.
All right. And then lastly, the Dominican Summer League debuted this week. There's going to be 2 teams for the Red Sox. We will dive into that rookie league level in future episodes for sure, where we can give it our full attention. But there's a lot going on this week, kind of some names that we mentioned before. Miguel Blaze, Luis Perales, and Juan Chacon are some names of note that we've talked about in the past. We'll definitely get into the summer league a little bit more often, as they have 2 teams there, and then there's 1 team at the Florida Complex League, so we'll work that into future episodes. But Jaron Duran and the draft kind of took precedence this week, and yeah, so if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on whichever platform you listen to the Over the Monster podcast on. There are a bunch of other ones that are out there, of course, and I did join actually with Keaton this week on Monday on the Red Seat podcast in place of Jake, who has some good family news. Welcomed a little one into the house, so shout out to Jake and his wife. Congratulations. I know he's filled in and been on the show several times, so congrats to Jake on that. Shelley, anything that you wanted to mention? Do you have a precap or anything you're recording this week?
Keaton and I did a precap on Sunday, and then we kind of like took the week off, and we will be coming back to your ear holes, I guess, next weekend.
As well you should. You deserve a weeknight off for once. So
yeah.
All right. Well, this was great talking to you about the draft and our pal Jaron Duran. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.